Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. We are very excited to be back on the air. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. We call this the Chuck Roast Show, because we are roasting the former news director of Moorhead State Public Radio, Chuck Mraz. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio, and a big special radio wave to the MSU Ronald Eaglin Space Science Center. With me to help roast Chuck from the University of Kentucky, assistant professor in the physician assistant program, Shelley Irving. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
And also, due to an unavoidable lapse in common judgment from
the fact that you needed a ride over here,
the executive director of networking and infrastructure for the University of Kentucky, to tell you how to access Health Matters on the web, Rick Phillips. Welcome back, Rick.
It might take me a second to remember exactly how to access all the goodies that are Health Matters on WMKY.org, but let's start right there with the website. There you can find the show's website. It has a list of all the most recent shows. And, you know, when we say most recent, we mean the most recent ones that we've recorded. So, obviously, we took a little bit of a sabbatical on the summer, but certainly you can find all the recent shows there at WMKY.org. With that list of shows, you'll be able to listen to them. You'll be able to read a little summary about them, try to get an idea of what we may have talked about. But then the real fun happens. You've listened. You've decided, you know what? I'm tired of this one-way communication stuff. I'm tired of them always talking to me. I want to talk to them. So you go to Facebook, facebook.com/HMRadioShow, and there you will find the fan page for Health Matters Radio Show. We encourage you to go there, get with the crowd that's already interacting there, ask your questions, poke at Tony, do whatever it is that you want to do to try to start some two-way communication. But we're there, facebook.com/HMRadioShow.
Our sponsor for the show, 10 Recommendations to Lower Your Risk of Cancer. This, obviously, when I see something with 10 things in it, Rick, you know,
I'm surprised you didn't
down.
Do 11 or 9.
Well, I was going over it with Shelley before the show, and I figured out that I did number 4 twice, so we had 11. Actually, the article was entitled 10 Recommendations on How to Prevent Cancer. First of all, we're not going to talk about any of the 10 recommendations this first fractional portion. This is one of those mystery car commercials where there's a bunch of music and some ocean waves and things like that, and you don't really get to see the actual product until the second fractional portion. I will tell you, cancer is responsible for 1 in 8 deaths across the globe, and wealthier countries have the highest burden. As we get wealthier, as we live longer, cancer becomes more common in older people, and so the burden is elevated. By 2030, global cancer burden is estimated to be 21.7 million new cases, 13 million deaths, total economic cost $458 billion. This report looked at all the data from the last 30 years on diet, weight, physical activity, and there are some pretty solid conclusions. You will probably remember many of the things that we will say in the next couple of fractional portions. We have touted this on Health Matters before. You've heard it from other people. There is not anything revolutionary here, but it is a reminder of the things you have to do to lower your risk of cancer and the things you need to do to live longer. So there is strong evidence. This was produced by the American Institute of Cancer Research, World Cancer Research Fund, the third in a series, data from 51 million people, 3.5 million cancer cases across all cancer sites. And they talked about, the big thing about here is we're going to talk about how to prevent cancer, which sounds like a wonderful thing, but most people already know what to do. It's just a hard thing to do. A lot of it involves changing to a healthier lifestyle, leaving some of the things that you grew up with or the habits that you picked up through the years and doing healthier things. So we will get to those things in our next fractional portion, but that's our sponsor, the first section teaser on the 10 recommendations to lower your risk of cancer. Stay tuned for recommendations 1 through 5 in our second fractional portion. Now we turn to Chuck Mraz. Chuck Mraz.
Chuck who?
Came to Kentucky to work at WMKY in 1986, and he retired at the end of June. And again, if you do the math.
Can we inject that I graduated high school in 1986? Would that be good? Would that be fun?
I mean, Chuck.
Dude was here a long time.
He was, and he is old. I mean, by any standard.
I mean, Chuck, he would appreciate it if we said he was old.
Yeah, Chuck's that kind of guy. He's a modest guy. He takes aging gracefully. I think we would all agree with that.
And you know, I probably won't see him until basketball season, so it's probably okay. We're safe. He's not here anymore.
Radio television degree from Southern Illinois University, Carbondale in 1978. Powerhouse of radio television announcers.
I'm waiting for the fun stuff.
Yeah. Worked for some small stations in Southern Illinois before he hit the big time in Moorhead. And he wanted to work, apparently, with a Division I school, a Division I college. And so he thought Moorhead looked more like Division I than – I better be careful. I'm here at Moorhead. So that was a great move. He has mentored hundreds of Moorhead State University students in May 2015.
I bet you it's thousands.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, he's been here so long and he's so old.
Yeah. I mean, you're probably right.
But now I bet you there are students who didn't know who Chuck was.
You think?
Well, I mean, how long we've been doing Health Matters? I mean, I've seen him twice. I mean, you know, hey, who's Chuck?
He's an early morning guy. I mean, he's an early riser. Some of the late people probably wouldn't notice him. In May 2015, the East Kentucky Leadership Conference Award for Media and Technology, his third Associated Press Play-by-Play Award, Best in the State Honor for Long Newscast, third place prize for sports writing. And that was in May 2015. So you can see he's clearly past his peak. I mean, that was... In his and all the press communications, they talked about his good year, his great year in 2015.
That was it. That was his Mount Everest,
much,
right?
Yeah, that was Mount Everest. We would call it a swan song. That was the thing. But he has won more than 30 Associated Press awards for broadcasting and sports reporting. But then it also says more than 40 Kentucky Associated Press awards. Play-by-play voice.
But Tony, and think about that, because we've not won any Kentucky Press awards.
No, we've not.
So, I mean, that really puts him in rare air.
Better than
us. He's done way better than we've ever done.
Sure. Called more than 1,000 Eagle Athletic events. And, of course, he called that famous 2011 tournament win when they Boyd State beat Louisville. So, we have our Health Matters top six fun facts about Chuck Maras.
Well, how's that fit in the 31 years of service?
There should at least be 10 for that much time, you would think.
Why is it something that...
I had a deadline. And so I can think of six.
Is 31 divisible by anything? That's a prime number.
It's a prime number.
I'll be darned. He retired on a prime number. Come on, Chuck. Give us something to work with.
Well, but you look, since 2015, 2016, depending on which source you have, he has been on a steady downhill slide. And I think
Chuck saw the writing on the wall. Really, it was really 30 years.
Probably so.
The last year he coasted.
Our top six fun Chuck Maras fun facts. Number one, I checked his LinkedIn page, and he has two endorsements for Microsoft Office. This guy could put together a Word document.
No. I bet it was PowerPoint.
You think he's a PowerPoint guy?
I bet you it was more power because six words, six lines.
Yeah. So anyway, he is an expert, and this is bound to
Chuck,
help him.
Chuck, we still love you. I promise.
Yeah, he's an expert at that. Now here's one fun fact number two, and this is word for word. He credits much of his success to his parents, Kim Maras and the late Joanne Meyer. Without them, it doesn't happen. Now, can you explain, Shelley, why it wouldn't happen without his parents?
Well, there's some medical reasons there.
Yeah, yeah. So
yeah, there are certainly some medical reasons there. I'm not sure what exactly he means by it, besides all the obvious stuff. And I don't know how much therapy he's had to have because of parental issues, but that word "it" says a whole lot.
So it's just like when two people love each other very much.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And well, so then the sports casting happens. I mean, that's you know.
Yeah.
Well, some kind of casting.
Yeah. There's
fun fact number three. Chuck was a master of sports calls. He could come up with more synonyms for defeated than probably any other newscaster I've ever
heard. Why do you think that was?
I've got some examples. I don't know. I guess he just got tired of saying one team defeated the other. So I'm going to now. This is the first attempt to imitate Chuck. Not very good, but I'll try.
Well, none of them are going to be very good.
No, they're going to be terrible. Here we go. All right. So the Yankees outranged the Rangers 7-3. The Mariners marinated the Astros 8-6. The Pirates buccaneered the Giants 10-5. The Phillies affiliated the Orioles 9-6. Other winners included the White Sox, the Red Sox, Tube Sox, the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs, and Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson. For WMKY Sports, I'm Chuck Maras.
That wasn't too bad.
Thank you.
The sad thing is we're going to have to do this at the end, and we're not going to do that.
I've been practicing. Okay. And you know, Chuck did have his personal
Only
favorites.
You,
he did
Tony.
Have his personal favorites. Now, our WMKY information says that Chuck was a big fan of the Green Bay Packers and the Chicago White Sox. He did have his favorite teams. So just anytime you see Chuck, just mention the Packers and the White Sox.
Go Packers.
Just let him know. Mm-hmm. Fun fact number five, lifelong fan of movies where people kill other people. He loved war movies. He liked especially the Korean War.
Do you think he had to phrase it like that?
That was my conclusion, not necessarily
movies Chuck's. That have... I don't know, graphic details of our history?
Right.
I mean, something
like that.
Kill.
You love the Magnificent Seven. That crept its way into every single fundraiser.
Did you ever have to do a fundraiser with him?
Yes. And he would mention by name Horst Buchholz, who apparently he felt was not qualified to be a member of the Magnificent Seven. So But
the thing is, Tony, this is where you have to kind of figure out what your, you know, involvement with the radio station was, because I always had to do it at the end of the week, not the beginning of the week, when they were all...
Chuck was an absolute maniac by the end
of
the
week. Right, I mean, he'd had 4 or 5 hours of sleep that whole week.
Yeah, if you've ever been around, for our radio fans who are not actually personally familiar with Chuck Mraz, again, if you're ever in NPR or, for that matter, public television fundraiser, by the end of the week, things start to really come unglued.
Yeah.
And so that would be... Chuck would be a master of coming unglued.
This is where they came up with the term, the wheels falling off.
Yeah, I think so. You know. So, fun fact number six. This is the final fun fact. We're going to leave this. Unfortunately, we've just trashed all the
segment. Much as we love Chuck, we just got to move on.
He is the second news director named Charles that Health Matters has put to bed.
You know, Health Matters 2, news directors 0. Cha-ching.
Our first news director, Charlie, who absolutely hated the show.
You know, I think Shelley... It'd be fitting if you would bring in an extra voice or two, because we've only had two. You know, we need 3 or 4 more voices, and only those people will know what we mean.
Yeah, so we were in constant danger of cancellation under the first Charles. The second Charles seemed to be too busy fundraising and reporting the scores.
Chuck who?
Yeah, Chuck Mraz. There it is. That's. I can't believe
we love you, Chuck. Yeah, really, I'm serious.
I mean, to put that much stuff in, and we've got so much health issues.
We could be talking about all these things that make people healthy, but no, we'd rather roast you,
yeah.
Chuck Mraz.
That's right.
Because after 31 years, you deserve it.
So, happy trails to former news director and currently retired but active citizen in Moorhead, Chuck Mraz. You will be missed unless we have a better aim. In which case,
so do you think are we actually going to see Chuck again? Maybe we can get him. I tell you what, we should invite him as a guest.
Oh no, we're going to take a break.
Speaking
we're going to reorganize.
Talking.
Yes, right, and let you have your fondest memory of Chuck Mraz while we get ready for our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. I think I remember how to do this. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters, and yep, I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Chuck Roast Show, and we have wasted
it's not pot roast?
Quite a bit of your time roasting former WMKY.
We roasted pot in a different show.
I got you. It's only in Colorado.
Our sponsor, to keep this thing moving very, very rapidly before Shelley gets herself in serious trouble, the top 10 recommendations to prevent cancer. And now we get to those recommendations. Recommendation number one, maintain a healthy weight. Many cancers have been linked to being overweight or obese, and even a high normal body mass index may be associated with an increased risk for cancer. The cancers that have been related, at least 12 of them, liver, ovarian, prostate, stomach, oropharyngeal, colorectal, breast, gallbladder, kidney, esophageal adenocarcinoma, pancreatic cancer, and endometrial cancer, all linked to being obese. And so, you know, I mean, when you think about causes of cancer, a lot of people are not aware it is both a cause of a number of different types of cancer, and it disrupts hormonal control. There's a mechanism for it, and these are not, again, breast cancer is not a trivial cancer. It's not like these are cancers that really don't count. These are very common cancers, very deadly cancers. As a matter of fact, breast and pancreas are in the top 5 causes of cancer death for women. And so being obese causes a higher risk of cancer. Number 2, physical activity. walk more, sit less. It's at least 150 minutes of moderate intensity or 75 minutes of high intensity physical activity per week among adults. These are the minimum requirements. 150 minutes. You're talking about, you know, you're getting up to 3 hours of walking, more or less, and you're talking about an hour 15 of high intensity stuff where you're really, you are out of breath. You are not able to carry on a conversation because you're breathing hard. And I think walk more and sit less. The sit less part is important. I have counseled several people already. I have a new job as a primary care physician, and I've counseled several people about sitting.
On second thought, I don't think I want you to be my family doctor anymore.
We're gonna,
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah,
you're gonna
we're going to go
it.
After that sitting. Yeah, and
you get it for free here on the air.
It's not worth it.
That's right.
It's not worth it.
Let's analyze Rick here on the air and tell everyone what he's doing wrong. But the thing is, all of us who have desk jobs have this problem. And I have, in fact, no, as you know, I mean, I left a desk job.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm supposed to be an executive with a desk job, but I'm never at my desk, ever. I kind of envy people who are.
Yeah, I was, because I would put together these presentations, and once I got started on one, I would probably, you know, it'd be a good 3 or 4 hours where I would just be sitting there working through the literature on some topic, whether it's this radio show or something else. So, yeah, I had some pretty long stretches. I don't in my new job, which I started August 1st. So, walk more, sit less. Number three, eat a diet with high consumption of grains, vegetables, fruits, and beans.
Okay, that sounds new. Why do you think the beans made it in there?
I think they're complex carbohydrates.
I'm starting to realize that a lot of people in the world eat a lot of beans and not necessarily Americans.
Yeah.
And that, you know, there are healthier people in the world because of their diet, their intake.
Yeah,
I remember
beans.
Going to Ethiopia, and everybody was talking about the food and, you know, take some peanut butter and crackers and you're not going to like anything. Everything that was bean-based, right, it was fabulous. It was great. I ate like a king over there. It was great. Only ate with one hand, but it was great.
Yeah. Yeah. Rick was a technical advisor. Would that be the right thing to say?
Like
to?
That. Yeah, it was on a mission trip over there, yeah.
Yeah, to Ethiopia.
Yeah, we actually did a video conference over there back when video conferences weren't popular. It was pretty cool.
The goal for total fiber intake, at least 30 grams a day. Now, I hate when they do that because then you don't know what to do. What is 30 grams of fiber a day? But at least 5 servings of non-starchy fruits and vegetables per day. And the starchy stuff, I mean, potatoes, I guess
but
they are a vegetable.
But it could be one glass of Metamucil, right?
Fiber, yeah, but let's face it, that's
Benefiber fiber or whatever it is. It could be. I mean, it doesn't have to be all that. It can be something else, right?
It's better if it's dietary, though, I think.
Yeah, and that's actually,
but
let me skip
to
ahead.
The point of not knowing how much, right? It could be.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Instead of 5 of these, it could be one of these.
But Shelley's absolutely right. We talked about this, actually, she and I did before the show. I'll skip to recommendation number 8, just because I will. Do not use supplements for cancer prevention. A healthy diet is the best way. And we've done this time and time again. It is not the same to eat your normal diet and then add a vitamin. If fish oil is good for your heart and lowers cancer, eat fish. Do not eat cheeseburgers with fish oil capsules. That doesn't work. So that was number 8, but I'll come back and then I'll stop here at number 4. Limit consumption of red and processed meat. Processed meat in particular, I am concerned about that. I you know, being a man, I happen to like red meat, and it does raise your risk of colon cancer and some other types of cancers by a small amount. The processed meat is, again, these are meats that are in symmetrical shapes. They are slices and round things and so forth. It's heavily processed, so they're either circular or square meat. Not a good thing. Processed meat can harm the lining of the stomach and lead to colonization with the wrong type of germ. Consumption of red meat should be limited to 3 times a week at most. We'll stop there. We'll finish with the last 5 recommendations on how to prevent cancer in our next fractional portion. You know, there have been 2 major things that happened this summer, and I thought we should go ahead and address them in this show. As we start back from our summer hiatus. The first thing, and this was, in my mind, this was huge, came out May 30th, actually, begin colorectal cancer screening at age 45. I'll say it again. The American Cancer Society has recommended that we begin screening for colon cancer, not at age 50, but in average-risk people at age 45. If you are at high risk, if you have a heavy family history, you start 10 years before whichever family member had colon cancer when it was first diagnosed. But if you are average risk, you don't have any particular risk factors for colon cancer, they still recommend starting at age 45. Colorectal cancer is the fourth most common cancer diagnosed among adults, the second leading cause of death from cancer. Second leading cause of death from cancer in men is prostate, in women is breast. But since women don't have prostates and men don't have breasts, breast cancer as often, then colorectal cancer, which is third for both of them, moves up to second for the population as a whole. New guidelines in the American Cancer Society recommend colorectal cancer start at age 45 rather than 50. Based on, here's the problem, we're seeing a rise in colorectal cancer among younger people, a significant rise. Perhaps it is different germs in the colon. Perhaps it is those endocrine disruptors, you know, the plastics or the chemicals that are in the environment. But for whatever reason, younger people are coming in with colon cancer. They took the models that the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force used to get their recommendation of starting at age 50. They put new data, more recent data, in those models, and it clearly favored, in terms of risk and benefit, it clearly favored starting at age 45. Now, the Preventive Services Task Force, that's the one that the insurance companies target. So this recommendation does not mean that your insurance will cover colon cancer screening at age 45. You can talk with your healthcare provider about this, but it does not mean that it's going to be covered by insurance. But they are confident when the Preventive Services Task Force re-reviews this and adds the new data, they will come to the same conclusion, but that's going to be a while. Options for screening, again, a fecal immunochemical test. That's basically a stool test, which is a little more expensive than the old hemocult test. The old hemocult test, you do that every year. You can do a DNA test every 3 years, a colonoscopy every 10 years. That is my personal recommendation because if you see something, you remove it, you fix it right away. CT colonography every 5 years, not my favorite because of the radiation, and it doesn't actually take the polyps out if you find them. And then finally, flexible sigmoidoscopy every 5 years. Many people feel that is underappreciated, undervalued. It looks only at the lower part of the colon, but it seems to work pretty well. All guidelines recommend routine screening. All current guidelines recommend age 50, so this is the change that's made. The thing is, you know, colon cancer has been dropping in people over age 50, but a 51% increase in those younger than age 50 since 1994.
That's a big increase, a big jump.
Yeah. And so, again, they did the models, they did it. And the problem's going to be the insurance. We try to keep our eyes firmly fixed on the future of medicine, and I think the future is either we're going to figure out a way to test for DNA that sort of takes away the need for screening we got. I think something is going to happen at 45, though. Yeah. I'm not sure what tests are going to be recommended. But
yeah, I think we will, too. And I think we really need to get a handle on what's causing it. Why is that increase happening? And, you know, it could be prevention efforts.
Yeah.
Could be better than even screening if we can get a handle for what's causing it.
You know, I've been big on the colon biome. I think mm-hmm. that we do things that affect the germs. I think our problem is with a lot of our foods, we think of it in terms of the chemicals present in the food. This food has gluten, has high fructose corn syrup in it, all these type of things. But it may be as important as the actual chemicals in our food is what does our food grow?
Right.
We learned, and we reported on this show a few months ago, there's a germ called Clostridium difficile that causes diarrhea. And it turned out that back around 2005 or so, there was a food additive that was approved by the FDA that this germ loves. It's like fertilizer for this germ. And since then, we clinicians have been fighting this gorilla type of Clostridium difficile that we can't seem to clear. And it looks like it may have been, at least the report in Nature was that this thing, we were actually feeding it with our food additives. So once again, you know, that whole the problem we've had with refractory problems with Clostridium difficile may be, not certain, but may be traced to a food additive. And so you wonder if we've done something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you test it on animals and you can see chemically that food additive is perfectly fine. We did not realize how it would change the germs in your gut. Yeah, mm-hmm. The biome.
And even animal studies don't look at that in great detail, or haven't, have they?
No.
So we don't know.
No, you think about restaurant inspections. They will look to see if the wallpaper goes to the floor. They will look to see that the drains are not clogged up and so forth. They don't really look to see if the food itself is any good for you or not. That's not a part of a restaurant inspection. As long as it's not infected, mm-hmm. they can, you know, whatever you know, you can serve people a lot of stuff that is not good for their health, as long as it doesn't have germs on it, your restaurant will pass inspection. So we focus so much on the immediate and on the chemical, and we've not looked at that long-term thing. But something has changed the nature of colon cancer, just like it changed the nature of the C. difficile diarrhea. And I think it's something we're doing, but you're right. We've got to figure that out, and those are hard things to figure out. It took genius-level research to figure out what we had done for the Clostridium difficile, mm-hmm. and we're still trying to figure out then what to do about what we know now about that.
Mm-hmm.
So watch for that. Again, the recommendation is for people at average risk. The American Cancer Society recommends that colorectal cancer screening of some sort begin at age 45. You may not start the colonoscopy at age 45, but there are some stool tests that you can do. Talk with your healthcare provider about it. We, looking at the problem we've had with an increase in colon cancer, we do support this. And while you may not be able to get a free screening colonoscopy at 45 because your insurance won't pay for it, there are a number of ways to screen for colon cancer, and you may be able to find something that you can do just to make sure that you do not fall victim to colon cancer before age 50. Next up, and this is to me the second big news item of the summer, was the fight, the all-out war between the American Heart Association, American College of Cardiology, and the American College of Physicians and American Academy of Family Physicians on blood pressure control. To summarize, the American College of Physicians and the American Association of Family Physicians, these are doctors who take care of adult people. They take care of pretty much everything from a sprained ankle to a digestive problem to a lung problem. If you want to see a doctor, these are the kind of doctors you would ordinarily see for your, we call it primary care. And they looked at blood pressure guidelines, and they felt that our guidelines were a little too strict. They published a new guideline, which was based on really solid scientific evidence that after age 60, but certainly after age 65, you could let the blood pressure go up a little bit to around 150 on the top number. They could not find the science for the bottom number, so they did not make a recommendation for that. Most notably, none of the cardiologists endorsed that guideline. It sat there. There was a very influential study called the SPRINT study, published in the New England Journal of Medicine, and I believe that was probably a couple of years ago now. And they went aggressively. They did not stop at 140 over 90, which is kind of everybody's general number. They wanted to get the blood pressure down to 120, and they were able to get it in a large number of people less than 130. The results were good, although there were a lot of things about that trial. They used a different method of measuring blood pressure, the way they selected their patients. There were a lot of things that were kind of different about that trial, but they found that regardless of your age, strict lower blood pressure goals actually lower the risk of heart attack and stroke. And so they published a guideline saying that 120 over 80 is your target. And it is conceivable if your blood pressure is above 130, you should be on medication. They said, well, you treat that with diet, but everybody says, well, what happens if the diet doesn't work? Are you going to go to medication? They said individualize it, their target is to get it down to 120 if possible. So you had this one group that said, let's let the top number float up to 150. The bottom, heart specialist said, no, we're going to try to keep the top number less than 120. The old values that we all use was around 140. And so they fought and they fought, and they have had press releases and research. And I want our radio fans to realize just how controversial and how intensely debated this is. This came out it came out in July. I don't have the date on this thing, but this was a review. There was another analysis of SPRINT that was released, and I believe politically it was released to bolster the cardiologist's claims. And so Bloomberg Press said lowering your blood pressure to these new targets could stave off dementia. Reuters said lowering it cuts the risk of memory decline. Time Magazine, finally something you can do to lower your risk of dementia. And they went back again and looked at that tight control. The study looked at something called mild cognitive impairment. Not certain exactly how they defined mild cognitive impairment, but they looked at people who were tightly controlled their blood pressure, and they seemed to have a slightly lower risk of mild cognitive impairment, which some people believe is a predecessor to dementia. This study did not show that you could prevent dementia with tight blood pressure control. So the writer of this article that I'm reading, a guy named Michael Joyce, he said, this is terrible reporting. We act like tight control of blood pressure can prevent dementia, but we don't have any evidence for that at all. As a matter of fact, when you look at the totality of evidence outside of that one sprint trial, it doesn't look like it's a split decision. What are you doing with blood pressure, Shelley?
I can't go, you know, I treat mostly older adults, and I just cannot go as tight as a cardiologist wants us to go. I just, there's falls, there's just lots of issues, and they just haven't been able to convince me yet that I need to get down to 120. That's not a reasonable target for me yet.
The SPRINT study, over 9,000 people with a high risk of heart disease, but not diabetes or stroke. Again, they had a blood pressure goal of less than 120. They were 19% less likely to develop mild cognitive impairment over the course of that trial. So these were specially selected people, defined as mild cognitive impairment, not dementia. And then the headlines come out, and maybe this is not the cardiologist's fault, it's the press's fault, but it comes out, yeah, you can prevent dementia by tight control of blood pressure. I'll give you an example. I had a young woman who she had had some tests done on her heart, and her heart was already getting stiff and because of the high blood pressure. Her blood pressure wasn't that high. We went aggressive with that. We said, all right, if we're seeing some heart changes in a young woman, we should do that. I've had some older people with dizziness and some other conditions, and I backed that down because I don't want them to fall. Mm-hmm. It's time for our second break. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. Nope, I wasn't asleep that last portion. I actually did listen, but now it's time for the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is our Chuck Roast Show. We are having fun talking about former Morehead State Public Radio news director Chuck Meraz in our first fractional portion, and then we got really serious about cancer and high blood pressure.
You did go there, didn't you?
Yeah.
You just shut the whole thing down.
Well, we shut you down because between.
But I can't talk about anything serious. You don't ever, you know. There's no. We've went all summer without talking about technology.
I know. I owe you a technology segment
all summer long.
This comes from Le Bon Heure Children's Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee, and I just massacred that pronunciation. I know. Pediatric gastroenterologist Carrie Cavender actually brought in spicy snack chips to the residents' meeting so his residents could sample Flamin' Hot Cheetos and Takis. I was not familiar with Takis. I've seen the Flamin' Hot Cheetos. They're dusted with a fiery red powder that brings about 100 kids a month. Let me say it again, 100 kids a month to the pediatric gastroenterology clinic with complaints of agonizing stomach pain. They have this red powder on them, so sometimes it looks like blood red vomiting and slimy blood-streaked stools.
Oh, come on.
Hang on a second. Let me say that again for our public radio producer.
Yes, yes.
Slimy blood-streaked stools.
These kids, I mean, it is a very hot spice, and it is a red food coloring, so all of their outputs from their GI system are brilliant red.
Couldn't they just eat blueberries and make it more interesting?
Well, it does sound, it sounds a little
Willy
Wonka.
All-American,
Dr. Cavender there, he talked to other pediatric gastroenterologists, and this, in the Southeast, this is all over the place. Abdominal pain, heartburn, maybe reflux. And, Shelley, you mentioned possibly even gallbladder.
Yeah, I think I've heard about some gallbladder issues from that in children as well.
Yeah, and so it is when a child comes in, the first question now the gastroenterologist asks the child is, have you been eating hot chips? The FDA has about 24 reports over the past 15 years, so apparently nobody's reporting Cheetos to the FDA. In a sense, that's reassuring. So the FDA's got two dozen in 15 years. He's got 100 kids a month coming into his clinic because of these things. Frito-Lay didn't respond. The Takis say their chips are compliant with regulations. Yeah, sure. But they're putting kids into the clinic. It used to be these things were people of lower socioeconomic status, and they would get these things, and you'd see them. But apparently, there are YouTube videos now. Mm-hmm. There are competitions, and so it is across all strata, all socioeconomic status. Kids are eating lots of Flaming Hot Cheetos.
Yes, my son and his friends, every day at lunch, they have a competition to see who can eat the most hot food, whatever. And it's usually one of those chips before they have to take a drink of water.
One of the researchers mixed crushed chips with a little water and tested the acidity. The normal gut pH is around 5. The pH of the chips was 3. So you think, okay, that pH is a little over half of the gut pH. Now, keep in mind, the pH is the logarithm of the hydrogen ion concentration. So when you drop from 5 to 3, it is 100 times more acidic than the gut pH. Diagnosed with stomach pain, gastritis, and things like that. Pharmacists in their hospital say more kids are on proton pump inhibitors. This is the purple pill. This is the Prilosec, the Nexium, Protonix, and medicines of that class. A lot of kids are taking those. Apparently, the problem is so bad, some schools have tried to ban the chips. School districts in California and Colorado tried to ban these chips. And Dr. Cavender says one of his patients is a hot chips dealer who buys big bags of these things, repackages them, and sells them to his classmates. So if you have a ban, you will have a black market.
Yes.
So you're going to go after the dealers. That's the thing.
Right.
You gotta check my son's backpack.
But it's how long before we got to get to the distributors?
Well, Dr. Cavender says this kid makes $20 a day selling hot chips.
Mm-hmm. So, I believe it.
So I guess maybe.
But is he selling them because people want to do the dare or the try, or are they just good?
You cannot say that chips that are that hot, that are producing those type of symptoms, you can't say that they're good. I think this is kids being stupid. This is you and me growing up, except now they've got something else to be stupid with.
Mm-hmm. I don't understand how the level of stupid has been dramatically increased since I was a kid.
Well, there's a lot more choices now, I think.
Yeah, but there's not that many stupid choices, are there?
There is a cable TV of stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do bad stuff electronically. Yeah, I mean, think about it. How many bad things could you do on your couch when you were growing up? Well, right now,
comment.
A couple.
A few.
Yeah, but you could not hack into your school's computer system from your couch.
Tony, I'm not as old as you. The modem cord, the telephone cord would reach to the couch. So, yes, I could have hacked into, provided everybody had it. You got to understand, I was an 80s high schooler.
I know. And so
and we had, there was internet, although it was pretty rough.
But the point is then, you have then foods, you have products, you have electronics, you have a lot of ways to be stupid. And this, unfortunately, is an extraordinarily bad way to be stupid.
But, I mean, is this just in – because Shelley's son is participating, I'm reluctant to say this bit, but
no, it's fine. Go ahead.
I mean, isn't this like the Tide, the Pod Challenge, and all the dumb stuff? This is idiotic. Yeah. Now, obviously, not quite as harmful as ingesting dangerous chemicals used to clean stains off your shirt.
Yeah, there's your point. You do the Tide Pod Challenge once, whereas this thing right here, he's doing this every day, right?
No, my child's not doing it every day because unless he has a dealer. He might have a dealer. But I don't buy them that often for him because of those issues.
Right. And so you get into this chronic – and keep in mind, these chips, of course, they're horrible nutritiously. I mean, there is absolutely no nutritional value whatsoever. They're producing some chronic inflammation, changing the norms of taste.
Changing the biome.
Yep, changing the gut biome, which we talked about with the colon cancer. And so, I mean, there's a lot of potential for harm. And so are we getting overly excited about some chips? You could argue that, yeah. Mm-hmm. But first of all, I thought it interesting. 100 patients a day coming into a pediatric gastroenterology clinic in Memphis with this indicates this is a – I mean, we're spending – wasting a lot of money on this, if nothing else. And these kids are, it's not like they just, oh, I ate one and I felt bad. They eat a package of them. This stuff sort of, the acid creates the irritation, which is chronic and has to be treated with something. And also, it hits those pain fibers in the stomach, and they're hurting pretty badly for a pretty long period of time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have reported on people who had some type of a hot pepper eating contest getting a jalapeno proctitis. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they have some neural irritants. They have things that irritate the nerves. And if they get through to either the rectal area or to the stomach wall, you're going to be hurting for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can see how this has escalated. When I was a kid, you'd dare your friends to drink pickle juice or, you know, squirt mustard in your mouth or whatever, you know. But now it's these manufactured products is now what kids are using, which is just a whole different playing field, I think. Then,
all right. So you've gone on record as saying that you did a mustard dare.
No, I did a pickle dare.
You did a pickle dare.
I did the pickle dare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rick, have you eaten food on a dare?
Hot wings. But that would have been in the 90s. I mean, that was, you know, that was like last week.
Okay.
I don't know that I'd necessarily say it was a dare as much as it was, you're not going to one-up me, dude.
Yeah, okay. So but there was something.
I mean, somebody went challenge to, we went to B-Dubs and somebody got Blazing Wings, and I said, you know what? I'll take some of those.
Okay, and so your masculine stupidity was challenged.
Well.
And so you had to respond.
Yeah, true. And you know, it wasn't as painful as I kind of thought it was going to be, but nonetheless, pretty dumb.
Yeah, and so I think in that sense, you know, we're passing judgment here as adults. We don't have that crushing peer pressure that your son has.
Right.
I mean, but we
fessed up. So what's yours?
I was trying to remember.
Tony's the guy that goes to Mexico and drinks the water.
Okay, that's enough said. That brings us back to
I didn't do anything. Intentionally stupid, I think. I ate some jalapenos once, and I just didn't chew them, which is actually works pretty well.
Until you need some ice cream later.
Yeah, there's a problem. There you go. On a slightly more serious note,
really,
I guess,
you never did anything dumb like that?
Oh, I did lots of dumb stuff, but not really eating. That was, you know, a farm kid. You didn't have to go to the table to do dumb stuff. You didn't have to go to a restaurant. Dumb stuff surrounded you.
Oh, Tony, you probably created some dumb stuff for us.
Sure, I did. Next up, I have some points I want to make on this.
And about just, Chuck?
No, it's not about Chuck. June 7th, 2018. This is actually about suicides. And
sorry.
Yeah, so CDC published an article about the alarming increase in suicides. Between 1999 and 2016, half of the states in the United States saw at least a 30% increase in suicide rates. And everybody except Nevada had an increase by at least 6%. Altogether, 45,000 total deaths by suicide in 2016 alone, and that's the last year.
How were these confirmed as suicides? I mean, were these like they left a note? Because it seems like with the opioid epidemic and just drug epidemic in general, that it could be kind of fuzzy figuring out who's intentional and who's accidental.
That's fair enough. And, you know, the summary I had, does not specifically say how they did them. And it is a question. When I started my practice, if someone took medicines in an overdose situation, it was always an attempt to end their life. I mean, that's what they did. And then it became to the point where that was extremely rare. Most of the overdose deaths were, in fact, accidental. People who'd combined some medicines in a way they were not aware of. But I'm going back to these. If we accept, and Shelley's point's an important one, but if we accept the fact that these people did actually commit suicide, among individuals who were with no known mental health conditions who died by suicide, 84% men, 16% women. And here's the thing about the ones who did not have a known mental health condition. They're less likely to have substance abuse than those with known mental health conditions. They had a higher likelihood of relationship problems, specifically with intimate partners, a higher percentage of arguments or conflicts. They were also more likely to have life stressors such as recent criminal legal problems, eviction, loss of home, and they were more likely to have a recent or impending crisis. Physical health problems, job, financial problems, about the same, whether you had a mental health condition or not. They were less likely to have any history of previous suicide attempts. And I think the reason I put this, one, is for our radio fans to know that suicide rates are increasing. By the way, among the states in terms of suicide rates, Kentucky ranked 20th at 16.3%. Montana, Alaska, Wyoming, New Mexico, and Utah were your top five. Your bottom five were Connecticut, Maryland, Massachusetts, New York, and New Jersey, and at the very bottom, District of Columbia.
I don't want to get us totally sidetracked, but just listening to the list that you read there, does that include physician-assisted suicide?
It does not.
Okay.
Which is, it is legal in a few states, but no, it does not.
Just
what's interesting, you know, is Minnesota turns out to be pretty high in terms of suicide rates. Their rates are increasing, I'll put it that way. And Montana and Alaska and Wyoming, these are places that actually have high rates of physical exercise. You know, we talk about exercise being good for your mental health, but in fact, they have some pretty significant rates of physical exercise.
Well, in your list, didn't you say that they were less likely to have mental health? Some of them.
Yeah. So maybe that's the ones that don't have mental health issues. The other possibility, I mean, the mental health people say, look, we don't have enough people to diagnose them. The fact that they weren't diagnosed may be a lack of mental health resources rather than the fact that people actually didn't have any mental health issues. I think you look at those life situations and at least they give you something to look for if you're looking out for your friend. And you're worried about them when they undergo some type of a serious setback, a life crisis. That's the time that you need to watch that. I hear pretty much every time someone commits suicide, there's always someone said, I should have known. And I will tell you, in terms of either suicidality or homicidality, we cannot predict. And if you think of when we record this, the previous weekend, there was a person who took an airplane in Seattle. Did some stunts and then crashed the airplane and killed himself, and who was suicidal. And we just cannot, among airport employees, among anyone, we cannot predict with any degree of accuracy who's going to be suicidal. The main thing, I think, is we look out for each other as we go through life events and stressors. That's the thing we can do as citizens, as friends, as family members that's going to be really important in lowering our rate of suicide, and probably questionnaires and, frankly, organized medicine is not going to be able to protect us from this suicide epidemic. We're going to have to work on this ourselves, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Final thing, and again on the light side, so Rick will join back in. A nasal contact lens may help fight obesity. This is a soft device inserted into the nose which cuts down on your ability to smell. And apparently, if you can't smell the food, then you don't eat as much food. The name is, it's marketed under the name NozNoz, N-O-Z-N-O-Z. Not to be confused with Miraz Miraz. That's a news director that you insert in your ears.
But if you ever need to rhyme Miraz with something.
NozNoz would be a good rhyme for Miraz. And so this is a NozNoz insert. You stick this thing in your nose. You wear it up to 12 hours a day, dispose of it after 2 weeks. Mine's hitting the trash can a lot earlier than that, I'll tell you. Study of 65 obese adults. If you wear it, you have a significant reduction in your weight, according to them. Now, you really break this thing apart, and the answer is no, you don't. They had to look at it in subgroups of who's older and who's younger before they finally got to the point where it was worthwhile.
If you're so desperate to lose weight that you'll do that, doesn't that mean you're going to probably lose a little weight?
Yeah, it does. As a matter of fact, our Health Matters non-recommendation is, sure, stick something in your nose. You probably won't eat as much food with things sticking in your nose.
Right. As long as it falls down enough over your mouth, you won't be able to eat.
Rick, we need to be off the air as soon as possible.
Special thanks to our Moorhead State Public Radio producer, Brian Courtney, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org, or just visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show, and please enjoy our efforts to imitate Chuck Mraz at the end of a Moorhead State Public Radio fundraiser.
And some of these cannot be done in the voice of Chuck. So just have to be in the spirit of Chuck. This morning, we need 7 callers before the network news. That's 7 callers. We call them our Magnificent Seven. Did you ever see the Magnificent Seven? It's the best Western movie ever made. It was a remake of The Seven Samurai. And it starred Yul Brynner, Steve McQueen, Charles Bronson, and this other dude. Actually, what is that? Horst
Buchholz.
Yeah. Who is going to step up and save this station? If the radio station were on fire, would you put it out? A bucket of water costs less than 50 cents a day, and you can't get your local news from a bucket of water. So please call right away. Let's get our day started.
There's a kid out in the hall. He wants to be a radio broadcaster. He's one of the many college students who seek shelter here at night. Our station is about giving these kids a chance. All they need is a decent meal and a microphone, and your money can make that happen. I've already sent in my pledge. For every $10 pledge, you get a cassette tape of Conway Twitty humming the NPR theme song. They're going fast, so call right away.
Okay, we got a challenge grant here from the Sons of Moorhead, and we need 7 callers in the next 60 minutes. That's, somebody help me out here.
0.116.
That's 0.116 callers per minute. And if they all give 110% like I do, that would be...
0.128
callers per minute. If we don't knock out this challenge grant, the Sons of Moorhead will take their money back, the station will close, and all those wonderful college kids will starve. So unless you want to look at those morning moms right in the eye, I suggest you get on the phone and pledge everything you have right now. There's still time to save the station and save these students. And Health Matters will be back with a much better show next week.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.